In 1930s Korea, a swindler and a young woman pose as a Japanese count and a handmaiden to seduce a Japanese heiress and steal her fortune. Welcome to the List Off! The Handmaiden from 2016 has 57 points.
My number one.
This looks great. How dare you watch this without me?
You're natural.
Simpsons podcast that became a Futurama podcast.
Yeah, I'll fix it in post. Yeah. What a great plot synopsis.
Thank you, Letterboxd, for being succinct this time.
That is just the tip of the iceberg.
Oh. Yeah, we'll get into it.
Yes, welcome to the List Off. Two Bad Neighbors presents the List Off, a Simpsons podcast that became a Futurama podcast that flamed out very quickly and now has risen like a phoenix from the ashes, and we are talking about what we should have been talking about in the first place. Movies! Specifically the movies of the 2010s, including this one, The Handmaiden. That's right. Alan, what are the stats on The Handmaiden?
Oh, well... this is number 33 on our list. The Handmaiden from 2016 has 57 points. It was on 4 of 20 lists. The highest ranking was at number 1 with our guest, Carly Maga. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. As you can hear, I'm very excited to talk about this movie. My number 1.
Yeah, which is great. I had never seen this until this... until 2 days ago when I watched it. Greg, what about you?
This would be the second time I watched it. I watched it yesterday.
But you had seen it before.
Yeah, once. Gotcha. I had seen it once before. Actually, kind of. Like, I saw the ending because I walked in on my roommates watching it.
Oh, interesting.
What?
And I saw the ending, just them passing the balls between themselves.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, this looks great. How dare you watch this without me? This is the most horny on main we're going to be.
Oh, yeah.
For the entire...
Yeah, I mean, I want to say up front, I'm often the horny one on this podcast for whatever reason. I don't know how it just happens. We talk about Rebecca Ferguson.
A lot.
You know, there's often times where I'm just like, man, she's so... And everyone's like, Alan, settle down. So I'm going to be very...
Oh,
respectful.
You're going to be the subdued one.
Yeah.
Me, on the other hand.
Yeah, Greg's off the leash.
I'll fight you for it. Okay. The role of the horny one in this trio.
Fantastic. I'm so excited.
This was written by Park Chan-wook and Jung Seo Kyung, directed by Park Chan-wook. I think this is only the third Park Chan-wook film I've seen. So I've seen Old Boy. That was the first one I saw, when I was very young.
Yep.
Too young, one might
too
say.
Too young.
but I was fascinated by it. And then I did see Stoker as well, I think his first English language film.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen that in a long time, and I have been wanting to rewatch it. And actually, watching this one, I was like, it's got some Stoker energy to it a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's pretty horny, too.
Stoker's very horny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't seen Stoker. I really, really want to.
Yeah, I think, again, I haven't seen it in a while, but I remember really liking it when I saw it. I think it was like... because I can't remember what year. Do you remember off the top of your head? What, 2013 maybe?
That Stoker came out?
Yeah, or was it after this one? Yeah, look it up briefly.
Great, I think question. It was before.
Yeah, I think it was before this one.
Yeah, 2013. Yeah. It's before this one.
Good job, Alan.
Thank you. So I remember in that time, I think I was maybe just starting with Letterboxd. Mm. And I remember giving it like a 5-star, and I think I put it as like my favorite film of the year.
Wow.
Like, I was really in on Stoker when it came out, and I haven't seen it since. So I'm like, I got to rewatch it. It's been like 11 years now.
You never hear of Stoker heads. You know, like, it really doesn't come up very much.
No one likes to stoke the fire like I do, but, you know.
I hate you. But no, Stoker, I want to see really. Park Chan-wook tends to have a bit of horn. In a lot of his films, like Thirst is really, really good.
Oh, that's another one I want to see.
Very horny.
Yeah.
And
horny vampires, right?
Horny vampires, yes. And Decision to Leave, I've seen. Mm. His most recent.
Yeah. I've heard that one's really good.
It was. Also about a relationship that shouldn't happen, but they can't help it. That's an ongoing theme of his, I think, in the movies that I've seen. They're like people that are drawn to each other that really shouldn't be.
Maybe the most devastating ending of any movie I've actually seen of
his. Yeah.
And that's including Old Boy.
Yeah. a tragic ending, like a Greek level,
yeah,
complicated dynamic of like family and love and lust and violence is what draws me to him.
It's an absolutely fantastic film. What else did I see? I saw Lady Vengeance.
Ooh, yeah,
that's,
I haven't seen that.
That's one that I saw. That's the one where they take turns killing the guy.
Mm-hmm. Sounds fun.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, because he has his Vengeance trilogy, as he calls it, which is Old Boy, Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, and is it just Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, or is it...
I think it's just Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance,
and then just Lady Vengeance.
Gotcha. But yeah, like, yeah. I think in some countries it's called Sympathy for Lady Vengeance, just to get the like connection.
Yeah.
And Sympathy for Old Boy.
Yeah, well, yeah. it's sympathy for Mr. Old Boy, or no sympathy for
Mr. Old Boy.
Yeah. Yes. Nobody feels bad for Old Boy. I feel bad for Old Boy.
Oh yeah.
Well, who's the old boy in that movie?
Well, they both are. Isn't that the point? And it's like, bro, I don't even think about you, man.
Yeah, it's the Don Draper meme in the. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't think about you at all.
Yeah, I think maybe we've literally talked about this on the podcast before. And you're like, I don't watch.
Haven't seen Mad Men.
You should. It's a great show.
Is it a great show?
Yeah, yeah.
It's great. Really
I've seen six episodes. I fell asleep.
People love it.
It's a slow show.
Yeah.
Yeah, not a lot happens. I mean, my favorite part about Mad Men is the previews for next episode, where it's just someone going, Don, yes, sit down. What? Like, that. Like that's all the dialogue. Like, it became this, like, kind of ongoing. I feel like they started leaning into it, where they're just like, we won't give anything away in the previews for next episode.
To John Hamm, do you even, like, the same delivery every time?
Yeah.
What?
What?
Yeah. What? Very good.
Anyway, it's just, yeah, it's Don Draper and some nobody. And he's like, I feel sorry for you. And Don Draper's response is, I don't think about you at all.
It's devastating. Very good. Devastating.
But yeah, so The Handmaiden. Okay, so I wanted to read I already read the Letterboxd synopsis, but the IMDb one, which is usually the more succinct one, kind of similar, but not exactly the same. A woman is hired as a handmaiden to a Japanese heiress. Heiress? Did I get it? Okay. But secretly she's involved in a plot to defraud her. Now, I will say, I'm kind of glad I didn't read either of these synopses before I watched the movie, because I love how this movie's structured.
Oh, it's lovely.
Mm. Where it's like, it reveals like just a little bit as you go. And like the three act kind of, you know, structure that or parts, whatever, is really interesting because in each part I had kind of a different reaction. Like, so part one, I'm basically like, all right. It's like, yeah, it's handmaiden. She falls in love with the person and they start fucking. Cool. That's, you know, I'm on board. Sure.
It's very, and it's very painterly.
Yeah.
So it's nice to watch.
Yeah. It's nice to watch. Gorgeous. And then part two, I'm like, what the fuck is this shit?
Yeah.
Park Chan-wook, you sick fuck. There's the guy I know from Old Boy.
Yeah.
And then part three, I'm like, oh, there's so much more to this than I thought there was.
Yeah.
And this is so like complex and interesting. And like, so I love the way it doles out information. And yeah, like I was enthralled throughout. So
I think that's, the ride that you're supposed to go on.
Yeah.
And I watched it, without knowing the story either, and had a very similar reaction of like, this is a wonderful watch in part one. And then the flip just, I remember thinking, you know, every once in a while you're watching a movie and you're like, is this my new favorite movie? Is this happening? Yeah. Is it happening right now? And I had that reaction to this movie. And I've only watched it maybe three times, including this, like just for this, this last watch, but it just left such a impact.
Yeah.
That I'm obsessed with it. It's just amazing.
I think one of the main things is the fact that the reveal, which I think is still in part one, the reveal that she's there as like a con artist, right? The handmaiden.
Suki.
Suki, yeah. because that's the other thing. Like the beginning of the movie, like there's like weird little, like there's her with the baby.
The very beginning of the movie leaves you in a place with a lot of questions.
Yeah, I'm like
why is this woman crying, saying that I should be going? Yeah. And you're like, oh, is she going into a horrible situation?
Yeah.
And then like it's a great movie that teaches you how to watch it, and in the way that I think a lot that makes it accessible for people who don't speak the language.
Sure.
You know, because it's like if you pay attention enough, you will be like, oh. Here's the moment where this thing gets revealed.
Yes.
This question that I had as to why this woman was crying, mm-hmm. and the assumptions that I had about that were wrong. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's not that she wanted to go in her place because she felt bad that Suki was going. It's because she wanted to go to get the money.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're all pickpockets and thieves.
They're all little scoundrels.
They don't. Yeah. She doesn't care about Suki. She is looking out for herself. And in that reveal, in that scene where we get the fake count coming mm-hmm. in, awesome performance. Can't remember that guy's name off the top of my head. But in that scene, it shows you what the movie's going to be. Mm-hmm. You're going to learn information. You're going to have questions about about that. And the reveal is going to be something that you probably didn't think of.
And it's going to totally reframe what you thought was happening.
Yes. Get ready for a lot of reframing.
Yes.
100%.
Yeah.
Ha Jung-woo is the guy who plays the Count.
A fantastic performance.
Yeah, he's real good. I mean, everyone's so funny.
Everyone's incredible.
I think he is basically, he's like the Brad Pitt of South Korea. Like,
yeah.
He's like an incredible, like a very accomplished, like leading man that Park Chan-wook absolutely destroys.
Yeah.
In this movie, he just plays an absolute, like, gremlin of a person. And gets his in the end, but mm-hmm. also has like such a beautiful finish. This is spoiler. Okay. So we might as well just lay out, if a listener has not seen it, this is huge spoiler territory.
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, stop the podcast. Go watch it.
Go watch it.
It's a ride. I guarantee you're going to enjoy it way more if you watch it without hearing us talk about it first.
It's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're not great at recaps.
No.
Never said we were.
Never said we were. Never will be.
Yeah. It's not part of the thing that we like.
No.
I just to cover our bases.
Yeah.
So Suki and the Count are scheming to for the Count to marry Lady Hideko.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he's immediately going to
get her inheritance
and then
put her in like a madhouse.
Yes.
Lady Hideko.
Yes.
However. Actually, the Count and Hideko are going to plot to put Suki in the madhouse.
Under Hideko's name.
Under Hideko's name.
But then Hideko and Suki actually fall in love.
They do fall in love. That neither of them intended.
Mm-mm.
Ooh, what a tangled web of hearts we weave.
You don't get to choose that.
No, you don't.
So Hideko goes along with their original plan, which is to confine Suki,
uh-huh.
but then conspires to poison the Count
uh-huh.
and get her out, and then go... disguise as a man because there's like a thing about how like two women can't travel by themselves or something.
Yes.
Right?
We haven't talked about the uncle.
The uncle? Oh, yeah. Yes. We'll talk about creepy old uncle.
Talk about Uncle Freak. Holy shit.
Uncle Sicko.
Yeah. This younger man playing a much older man.
Yeah.
With a weird mustache that changes color.
And a black mouth.
Yeah. That's something that I learned a lot more about from watching Blue Eye Samurai.
Mm. What's that?
Oh, you gotta watch Blue Eye Samurai.
Netflix show?
Oh, yeah. This is the first time on Maine that I've ever recommended a Netflix show other than Love is Blind. And you...
Hell yes.
You've gotta watch Blue Eye Samurai.
And to be clear, Love is Blind and Blue Eye Samurai, very different shows.
Very different shows. It's an animated...
Huh. In almost every way.
It's like an animated show in isolationist Japan, and it goes through like why the like Japanese ladies would stain their teeth and their mouths.
Mm.
Yeah, it's like as a symbol of status.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, yeah,
and yeah,
he's obsessed with Japanese.
Yes, yeah, and it like
He's the one who's I helped the Japanese annex Korea by getting them a gold mine, or in return they gave me a gold mine.
Yeah, he was a translator.
Yes.
And then in thanks they gave him a gold mine.
Yeah.
And he decided to just essentially and always become Japanese.
Yeah. So he naturalizes himself, mm-hmm. quote unquote, and like part of that I think is staining the mouth.
I thought it was just I thought his black mouth was just the ink from his pens.
That would make more sense too. Yeah, that would make sense. But it is a thing in like
From his octopus.
Yeah. There's if that's the case, I could be completely wrong and I'm reading into it and
he's probably sucking off that octopus. Are you kidding me? He's a freak.
Yeah, it's probably.
Name is Uncle Freak in the movie.
I don't think you're reading too much into it because it's probably there. There's probably like many reasons for his black mouth.
Yeah.
But I don't think Park Chan-wook would do something without multiple levels of meaning.
Oh, yeah.
Because the more you think about this movie, the more you watch it.
Yeah.
The more you get out of it.
Yeah. So, along the lines of, cause I don't want to just shout out one performance.
Mm.
I think one of my favorite parts of this movie is when Suki first meets Hideko,
mm-hmm.
And she's like, "Oh, the Count should have didn't tell me she was so beautiful."
Yeah.
And like she's in love immediately, and I buy it. I buy it completely, and it's entirely because of her performance. And I'm so bad with these names that. I want.
This is her first movie role as well.
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she totally can tell. Like, not in a way that she's not. She's obviously amazing, but there's a kind of like she's just so present,
mm-hmm.
and it's just so like I can't picture her in another role, because she's just wild.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's always flailing about. She's like. Having tantrums, like you can tell that she's just kind of like a street urchin who doesn't know how to behave in this world.
Yeah.
So, and she's like not trying to hide that she's like got this girl crush that's growing into something much more deep, mm-hmm. and her internal like stress of needing to fool this woman while she's falling in love with her is like she doesn't know what to do, and so she just starts like I just love how Park shoots her, and she's like when she has to leave the Count and Hideko alone, she mm-hmm. like runs back to the house like to get the paints, and she's like dropping things, and then she's like sprinting back, and she's like got her mushrooms that she was foraging to leave them alone, and she just like throws them on the ground and she watches them through the window, and she's just like she's so innocent in that way. Like you can tell that she's never had feelings like this before and she doesn't know what to do.
Totally, yeah.
So it's like the idea that this is Kim something.
The actress?
Yes.
Kim Tae-ree.
Kim Tae-ree. Yeah. The fact that this is her first movie, I think, is perfect. Tae-ree, maybe. Perfect.
T-A-E.
Yeah.
It's Tae-ree. Truly a find. It's such a wonderful find, and it's almost like you're right. Like if this role is going to work, if the actor portraying this person is going to work, you almost can't have seen them before.
Yeah.
They need to have been plucked off the street in a way, you know?
Yeah.
You need to be like, "Oh, obscurity. Now you're in this movie and you don't know how to behave in mm-hmm. this world of cinema," right?
Yeah.
That is the way to unlock this character, I think, who just doesn't have like any inhibitions about how they look on the screen, like because she is beautiful, but she's also so naive in every way, shape, and form,
truly,
which makes the turn in part two even more like sinister from Hideko's. Like from Hideko's point of view.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that. You think that Hideko's the one that like Suki is this like streetwise, I don't care. I've like no morals. I'm just here to get money. You think like she's got she's the one with the power.
Mm-hmm.
And Hideko is this innocent kind of like frail, sheltered woman who can be easily fooled into losing her fortune, but the turn is that it's entirely the opposite.
It is, and when when that turn does come, we have like this. What is her name now? They're both Kim. Kim Min-hee is photographed as in the first part as a painting.
Yes,
mm-hmm. she looks like she steps out of one of those old Japanese paintings. She looks like a doll, mm-hmm. and she's described as a doll. Like ladies are handmaidens' dolls, is what I think Suki actually like narrates to us.
Yeah,
when she is taking unbuttoning her dress in a totally unerotic way.
Yeah, normal,
normal.
Oh yeah,
totally. Mm-hmm. Chase.
No arousal happening. No.
This all is a very professional relationship. Right. Yes.
Professional from end to end. Very good.
And in between.
And all of the things in between.
You'll learn I am the most bashful person. This is going to be a ride.
I mean, so the... Like, we were talking about, like, reframing and recontextualizing, and I think one that I really appreciated, not only because it's hot, but, like, the sex scene between the two, the kind of initial sex scene, right? Like, when we first see it, obviously, like, the intention is, Hideko is, like, virginal, mm-hmm. right? Like, she doesn't really know what to expect. That's what she's telling her, right? Like, when I have sex with a count, I don't know what I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. And Suki... like we're to understand that she's probably rolled around in the hay before, so she knows what she's
certainly
doing.
Acts like she has.
Yeah, and so like, so she's like, oh, like, you know, teaching her stuff or whatever, and it's really sweet because you do feel like, oh, they're actually like obviously like into each other now,
uh-huh.
if you know what I mean. And when it's recontextualized later, and you realize, oh, like Hideko's pretending. Because she's been a freak since she was a girl. I mean, not, you know, she's been abused and...
Yeah, it's complicated.
Yeah, it's not a positive thing, but, like, she knows so much about sex.
Yeah.
And so, like, I really appreciated that, because, like, I feel like it could... They easily could not have shown that scene again, right?
Mm. Well, it's a... I like how we're talking about reframing, because in a sense, the sex scene... isn't reframed. It's just you get to understand it.
Yes.
You know, because Park Chan-wook
shows more of it as well.
Yeah, exactly. They show you a lot more.
He smartly cuts it off at the moment where Suki starts to go down on Hideko.
Yeah,
and
she stutters
and just
naturally.
Yeah. And just
mesmerizingly beautiful. What
beautiful.
Did she say?
Which is what.
What
the count
said to
he's like, yeah, yeah, you like, if you stutter, it'll like fool her into, you know, like, they'll believe that you think that,
yes,
that you're in love with them. And she like just naturally stutters because this girl's pussy's unbelievable.
Yeah. And it's very important that he cuts there, because if he let it play out, then the way you would be like, no,
Hideko, there I see you.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Because exactly, they do everything. Yeah.
And she even says, she's like, are you like, you must be a natural.
Yeah,
like,
I love that line. Yeah, yeah. You're a natural. Yeah. And then you really see how like this child, like, not, I shouldn't say she's a child, but she's just like, Suki is way more innocent than you think. And Hideko knows pretty well what she's doing.
How to push her buttons. If you will.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yep. So yeah, it's very important that that scene cuts where it does for part one to actually work.
Yes.
For the rest of it to work, because you're just like, we're with Suki for that whole part.
Mm-hmm.
And when it cuts to her in the drawing room the next day, it's just like, it's the only thing she's thinking about. And you're like, okay, they're both really into each other. And then of course, the betrayal happens, and the first time I watched it, I was just like, you! Yeah. You bad woman!
How dare you!
How dare you do this to our delightful urchin? You two, I hope you two get what you deserve. And they do.
That's well, right. Everybody gets what they deserve in the end.
Yeah. It's the most happy ending that I've ever seen in a Park Chan-wook movie.
Yes, which is wonderful.
He said, actually, when he was making the film, is... I wanted to make a film with a happy ending.
I think he also...
It's based on a book.
Yes.
That's like in Britain or something.
You know what the book's called?
I don't remember.
It's called Fingersmith.
Great.
Amazing. Amazing.
The Take that how title. You will.
such an English name that like it couldn't. Well, it couldn't be applied to the Handmaiden because the Handmaiden takes a lot of liberties, especially with the last third. But it's by the book was by a woman named Sarah Waters who has written a lot of. She's gay, and a lot of her stories are about gay women, usually ending up okay in the end.
Yeah. Are they like outwardly gay, or are they just like longtime roommates?
Yeah, I mean, more I think the latter.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Because it's Victorian, right?
It's usually period. Yeah. So that's like not so much out in the open.
It's interesting to me that this movie in Korean is called Lady, isn't it?
Ooh.
It translates to lady, whereas the international title is The Handmaiden.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so referring to two different characters in the film. Yeah.
I think that's fun.
That is fun.
Yeah, they both get theirs.
And I like that. I heard that Park Chan-wook originally was going to do something like a very faithful adaptation of the novel and set it in England.
Mm-hmm.
But then he realized that there was like a TV miniseries that did that. Mm-hmm. And he was like, okay, well, that's been done. So I'm going to do. Yeah. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Which is awesome. Setting it in 1930s Korea.
Colonial. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Japanese occupied Korea. What a fun place to set it.
I kind of lament not getting to see this in theaters, if only for the subtitles. I don't know if you are like, because the version I watched was all just black subtitles throughout.
Yeah.
But I was reading that. In the original cut, the official version, whatever you want to call it, it has like white subtitles for Korean, I think, and yellow subtitles for Japanese. So there's obviously like throughout the movie, different characters speak different languages. I don't know either of them, so you know it's easy for me to just be like a language I don't know. And thank you for giving me the English, so I understand what's happening.
Yeah.
But I think it'd be really cool to get to see that version. I don't know if you've seen that version.
The first time I saw it had that, and then subsequently did not. So I don't remember exactly those moments, but it's like I think with the uncle who's naturalized a Korean, naturalizes Japanese. Starts speaking Korean at the end in his like final scene.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I feel like there's probably some other like code switching, as it were.
Yes,
that would happen throughout. That would be because like it was intentionally done to have the differentiation in the subtitles. So,
yeah.
But regardless, it was still great.
I could pick up on a little bit.
Yeah,
just a little, because Japanese has a very distinctive sound.
Yeah.
To it. But honestly, like, there were times when I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I really don't know. There were, like, tiny moments where I was like, that sounds Japanese.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
Or sometimes they say, like, why are you speaking Korean? Why aren't you speaking Japanese?
Yeah. Hey, that's, yep. I'm totally with you.
Yeah. But what I love about movies like this is just, there's as much as you want to get out of it. And, like, if you want to start digging into all the complexities that are there and all the little moments that signal what's actually happening that go over your head the first time you watch it, it's just so exciting. It's so deep.
Yeah. So I just realized something. We have not gotten to know our guest.
Oh, hey.
Like at all.
Yeah. You immediately were like, what are the stats for this movie? So I'm like, all
right,
here we go.
I jumped right in because I couldn't wait to talk
about it. That's fair.
I really couldn't wait to talk about it. But I would love to get to know our guest a little more.
Yeah.
In the context of this movie being about dang ass freaks.
Huh. Yeah, explain yourself.
Yeah. Well, this
what
movie...
led you to put this as number one?
Yeah, well,
let's dig into that.
That's the question that we used to ask our guests of the Futurama days. What's your deal?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, and I think to be clear, this is the first I want to say official number one.
That's right.
That we're discussing on our list. Like, obviously, as we get down to the higher numbers on the overall list, we'll get a bunch more people's number one picks. I say official one because you'll have already heard this episode because it came out before this, but the A Ghost Story episode has a bit of a kerfuffle with the fact that Joanna had it at her number one because she didn't realize she was ranking the movies.
Oh,
so we kept it there. Because she kind of was like, you know what? I still maybe would have put it. Like, I don't know. I didn't think about the ranking, so maybe I would have. And I'm sure we'll talk about that with her on that episode that you've already heard, but we haven't recorded it yet. But that being said, yeah, it wasn't like her official pick for number one. And therefore, this is, yeah, the first one going down our list that it's like, this is what you chose.
This is my favorite one. Your favorite of that film entire decade.
Of the 2010s. So. Yep. What's your deal?
I hadn't met you until like two nights ago.
Literally, yeah. Yeah,
that's true. Oh yeah.
So my deal. My name's Carly, and why am I struggling with this question?
Well, you're from Toronto.
Yeah. So before moving out to Calgary, Colin, my husband, and
now
I,
husband,
we
past and future guest.
Oh yes, yeah, mm-hmm. And probably future guest on
that's
list.
Literally what I said.
I thought you said past Futurama guest.
Oh,
he was also
that's
on
true.
Past Futurama.
Yeah, he was
guest.
On a past. That's very funny. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, past Futurama guest. I'm going to start saying that now.
Yeah,
anytime someone was on the Futurama era, a past Futurama
past
guest.
Past in the future.
Yes.
So we moved here. It'll be like 3 years ago in May, which is crazy. But big movie fans. We both have our backgrounds in theater. Mm-hmm. So he was a maker. I was a critic. That's how we met.
You criticized his performance.
Yeah, I thought he was shit.
And then he confronted you Birdman style.
And then sparks flew, and here we are.
Which would have been a better ending to that movie.
I agree. That would be
movie
good.
Sucks.
That would be good.
Honestly. Actually, I love that woman though.
Oh, she's wonderful.
Yeah, she's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
She's an incredible actress.
Yeah. I wouldn't give to like play a critic like that.
Yeah.
I don't practice as much anymore, but I still do it once or twice.
Please do it.
Yeah, I just
Calgary needs it.
I'm begging you right here as a person who works in theater.
Mm.
We need it. We need it in this city.
Yeah, I agree.
So badly. Mm-hmm. And obviously you see it.
Yes.
Obviously you see it. And we need a real criticism, but we also need
more
real validation. Mm. You know?
Yeah, like a paper to say this was good, this happened,
yes.
And now you can use it in a grant proposal.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We need those things, and we need to actually work for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we need to. And like the Calgary Theatre Critics Awards have been dead really for quite a while. They're like a Facebook event now.
Mm. Yeah.
But they used to be a real thing because we had like four or five actual publishing, constantly publishing critics. And I'm not saying you got to do this now. I'm just saying, please.
Please help us. I taught a lot of criticism in Toronto, so cool. I've been trying to think of ways to bring it back here. Mm-hmm. And I work for Arts Commons, a performing arts center downtown now, and we have a lot of theater companies as resident companies, so there's a lot of opportunities there to exercise a little bit more of that, change how we think about who a critic should be or how it should look like or what it talks about. Kind of like this I consider criticism. It is, we're discussing, we're analyzing, we're talking about what's good, what to celebrate and what not to. I think there's different, it's just, it's not going to always look like it's in a paper anymore.
Yeah.
Thankfully, lots of reasons why that shouldn't be.
Paper?
But
what's that?
Oh, I love papers.
Yeah.
I do too.
Yeah.
To be clear.
I wrote mostly for the Toronto Star.
Nice.
So, I still love a tactile.
Oh, I would.
Piece
man,
of
what I
trash.
Wouldn't give for like, there used to be, I mean, multiple ones, but I can't remember which one it was, but there was a Calgary, like independently run, like not a newspaper, but kind of like a, something adjacent. I don't know.
Was it Beetroot?
Beetroot might have been the one I'm thinking of.
Just like an alt weekly.
Yeah, exactly. And like they would have a weekly crossword, you know, and I would love to do the crossword. Like, I don't know. And they'd have, they'd have like movie like reviews and stuff. I don't know. I'd miss that stuff as well.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it's a tough thing to bring back. Like It might come back around, like a lot of, you know, like vinyl or whatever, other weird things that people thought were dead and have come back. Even like Blu-rays are like having a bit of a resurgence. You know?
Gas.
Gasoline. Gasoline. Sure.
Hey, there you go.
It's back.
Let's go back.
I mean, you know, really horrible policies about
coal.
Like, yeah.
Rights.
Yeah, rights are back. But for real, the Blu-ray is back. It's making a...
It's making a comeback.
It's making a comeback, and I think
for,
that's...
like, weirdo freaks, I guess.
Well, I think it's even... It's starting to get a little deeper than that.
Yeah.
It's starting... Like, the actual, like... physical media penetration is starting to happen a little bit more.
Yeah.
Because
the streaming services fucked themselves.
They did. And now we have like we have people who weren't listening to me.
Uh-huh. Me too.
In my house. In my house, in starting my to house. See that it's
isn't it nice to have this and be like, I want to watch blank and like, I can do it whenever I want.
Now Braden on downstairs. Totally has always been on board with this.
Yeah, with his porno collection.
Even more than me with the South Korean porno collection. And he has doubles of everything.
Oh, not triples?
Sometimes triples. Triples is best.
Triples is better. That's better.
Doubles is good. Triples is
triples
best.
Triples is best. I think we made this joke already.
It's but never it's
always,
not
it's always funny.
I do know what you're talking about.
I have doubles of the Nova and triples of the Barracuda. but now we had a one of our movies on Apple on the Apple Store get removed from us
that you purchased
that we had purchased. It was the Alexander Ultimate Cut. True story.
Huh.
And now we don't have it anymore. It's just gone. And
so
you
how
can't
do you feel about
it
Apple as a company anywhere. Now?
I am fine with them. I am fine with them. And a company that has never done anything wrong.
I know. Spotless record.
For context, Carly, we often fight about how I hate Apple and Greg is very pro-Apple. So
look at my Apple product in my hand right now. Exactly.
I mean, I also have an Apple product in my hand as we speak.
Got it on my wrist. Yeah.
You got me beat there.
You guys could airdrop shit to each other right now.
Yeah, we
I'd
could.
Be lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd be left out.
I'd be left ba-doop, out. Ba-doop. But guess what? I could still email you shit. There's other ways to communicate.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Maybe you have to press buttons and shit.
It's not end-to-end integrated, Alan. But all that to say that I think, yes, physical media is making its way back very, very slowly. And who knows if that will actually translate into papers. But I think we can all agree that like we've lost something.
Yes, I hard agree. And it's funny that in Calgary there are a few publications that have actually come out recently. The Big Kitty magazine is cool.
Oh, yeah.
And the scene is still around.
It's still happening. Yeah, yes. I remember seeing that briefly at a.
I thought that was gone.
Day. Yeah,
I honestly thought that was.
It's
gone.
In a moment of transition.
Okay.
I think the founding editor just. Left in December, so they're trying to figure out what the future of it is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still around and has a new owner, so I have hopes for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think that, again, like, the same way we're talking about the, like, the streaming services, it when it first became popular, everyone was like, this is the future, right? Like, why do I need to own movies anymore when I can just watch them with a click of a button? And now we're seeing that slowly crumble. And I think in the same way that, like, not just social media, but like the internet in general and the way it reports news and you know, like, especially in Canada with like the weird like legislation with social media news stuff. But like that's starting to kind of crumble a bit. And so I can foresee like our generation, next generation, I don't know, like being like, yeah, like I don't want to read news online because it sucks. It's filled with ads. You know, they don't get to the actual story until like you scroll to the very bottom. You know, all that kind of stuff can like cause this like resurgence in, hey, remember newspapers and how the most important information's at the beginning of the article?
Oh.
And that's how they write it? Like,
like
I can see that coming back, but it's just probably not for a long time, would be my guess.
It is. I do. The user experience of a paper, especially I have such a soft spot for the like free monthly or free weeklies that really are meant to be an artistic type, like a place where you stumble upon things that you wouldn't necessarily be delivered into your phone.
Exactly.
Into
newspapers don't have an algorithm.
Yes.
Right?
Except they have human algorithms.
Well, yes.
As people who make
those
them.
Those are called robots, and we're against them.
But no, I do. Yeah. So, criticism.
Yes.
I do think, yes, yes. I do think that, I don't think, traditional criticism has been, there's been challenges there, but I don't think it actually has, like, declined in terms of our, general discourse at all. Mm-hmm. I think it has democratized, Letterboxd. Actually, I got Letterboxd for this ranking list.
Oh, really?
And now, yes. And,
oh, I remember that, actually. Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't use, and I, the critic does not use it to, like, I don't write reviews on it.
Yeah.
Because I got to get paid for that. I'm not doing that for free.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Smart.
Very smart. Yeah.
Greg White writes like one sentence. Sometimes,
I do.
And it's sometimes very funny.
That's what I would do too. Yeah. If I,
or he'll literally just write, I watched this at Crowfoot. Like he'll just write where he saw it. And I'm like, thanks, Greg.
I love that.
I love it too. It's because like he used it more as a diary, yeah. like to remember,
yes.
you know, like when did I see that? And yeah.
Now I'm getting into tags. Which is saving a lot of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I just watch a lot of movies at Crowfoot. I don't have to write anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
The important part is just for Letterboxd for me is just remembering that I watched movies.
Yeah.
That's what I use it for too. Yeah, I love it as that diary feature.
There are 100% many times where I go to log a movie that I just watched and I see I've seen this before, and I'm like, what? And I check, and I'm like, I saw it like 10 years ago. I remember nothing about it.
Oh, yeah.
It's happened so many times. It's very funny.
Yeah, that was honestly me with this movie.
Yeah?
Like, I hadn't seen it for a little bit.
Yeah.
It hadn't been that long.
Mm-hmm.
And I had forgotten almost everything about it.
Yeah.
Probably because it has a lot of reveals and false pretenses.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's long.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's a. There's a lot of movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the extended cut, I believe.
Whoopsies.
Ooh.
It has
two very different reactions.
I just watched the one that came out in theaters, right?
I just didn't know. I received it by very legal means.
You watched a 168 minute cut.
Yeah. Yeah, it was like it has an extra 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. But I it didn't like it didn't feel overly long. I don't know. Like
no.
It is a long movie, but it didn't, I think, again, because of the structure and because of the way things are revealed, I was just like, I was just enraptured. And I was just like, what's the next reveal going to be? Who's actually secret? Like, is the uncle going to like take off his mustache and be like, actually, I'm the count. And I'm like, what's happening? Because he is a young actor. Like, and you can tell. Like,
and it's not just like what I love about this movie. It's not just about like plot twists and these feel like real people to me.
Yeah.
And they are, even the Count, who is like a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And even like in the last third, when you do get, like he has that, he's like sharing a meal with Deco and he's getting screwed over, but he doesn't know it yet. That like he tells more about like how he got the nickname and he kind of like, he just wants to be able to order wine without having to check the price. Like that's all it's like, oh God damn it. Like,
yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, oh man, I empathize with that aspect of it, but you went about it like a really shitty way, my friend. And then, and obviously that also helps like reestablish the idea that Hideko realized she's doing the right thing by basically betraying him. Because when she like asks about Suki and he's just like, yeah, I don't know. She'll probably die soon. Like, you know, he's very, like, dismissive of it. Like,
yeah. And then he tries to rape her, so.
Well,
and you're like,
and then,
okay, you
and then
deserve
it's like,
to die now.
Please drink this thing I poisoned. Please, please drink it before we.
She's so smart. I love her.
Oh, that scene's so fucking
good.
God.
She's, like, yeah, that's, I forgot about that scene in this rewatch. I think, you know, obvious reasons wanting to block it out. But, like, when she's, like, when, the, like, the final betrayal is happening and Hideko is drugging this guy and running away, it's like. You think maybe there's like a chance she's gonna, and then he just reveals himself to actually be a piece, like a monster.
Yep.
And what is also amazing about it is that it doesn't happen. He doesn't get it. She gets away.
Yeah.
And she does it by like
by drinking poison and giving making it... him drink it through her mouth. Like, so smart. Because yeah, the whole time I'm like, damn it, he's not going to drink it. He's just holding it.
It's so suspenseful.
Yeah.
And that's Park Chan, like, he's a master of that. Yeah. And he's like, she's like, she's in like in a very compromised position. And then at the last second, he just like collapses and you're like, thank God we don't have to watch that. And that doesn't have to happen to her.
Absolutely.
And they get away and get to and fuck get with to, balls on
yeah,
a boat.
Yeah, have the silver balls.
It's the object of oppression turned into your
object of sexual liberation.
Yeah.
Yeah, a weapon for your obedience and pain turned into pleasure and as you escape, literally. Yeah. I don't know what more you want in a movie.
The ending of this movie is that, I think, is it Arrested Development meme where it's like good for her. Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm
good
talking
for
about?
Her.
What else can you say, really? Yeah. You know, like, yeah, good for them.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good for both of them. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know some people have, like, issues with the gratuitousness of the sex scene, of the final scene.
Yeah.
But I just, like, the whole thing is, like, so extreme. So,
yeah,
like,
gratuitous.
I mean, also,
could have
like,
seen more if you asked me.
Also,
it's like, it's a good litmus test to be like, if you're cool or not.
Yeah.
Like,
if you're a prude.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's really, 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 really important to show them having sex again, this time fully aware of who each other are.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
And fully comfortable with who each other are. And
there's
free.
No secrets anymore. Yeah. It's like, we just are in. With each other for good.
We need to see the scene that they've had that we've seen twice.
Yeah.
Right? But they were both under false pretenses, but they were both super into it. Now we need masks off.
Yeah.
Plus you get
need it. It has to happen. It's a story. It's an essential story beat.
That's lovely.
You get the what I'm going to just go on record and say is the sexiest tooth filing scene I've ever seen.
Hell yeah. And I think, like, that's from the book too.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, cause it, again, it's, this is an early in the film. So like, you still don't know all the machinations that are going on, but it's just like this moment, this brief little moment where she's filing her fucking tooth in her mouth. It's very like, you know, sexualized and whatnot. And she like just rubs her elbow while she's doing it.
Is that where she's in the bath?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Hideko's naked in the bath.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just like, oh, they're into each other. I love it. I love those subtle
moments. But also, you don't know what she's up, like, what she's at, really. Like, after you know that Hideko is, like, has this entirely different motivation, you're like, there is an element of, like, she's seducing Suki so that she doesn't get wise to what's actually going on. And then there's... But then it also is like, it must be kind of real because, like, you know. I also want to talk about the scene in which, like, they reveal to each other what's going on.
Like where she tries to hang herself.
Yeah.
And oh, my God.
It's
so funny.
It's
hilarious.
It is
very funny also. When she, like, leaves briefly, she's like. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so
But she's I laughed like, out loud. She gets so pissed that she drops her.
Yeah, because they have this moment where Hideko's like, even if I love somebody else, would you want me to marry the Count? And so he's like...
She's like, you should still do it.
Yeah.
And she slaps her. She's like, fuck you.
Because
at that point, she, you know, we find out, like, she's actually falling for her. And she's like, I know you have this plan. Like, you're not supposed to know that I know it. But I do know it. And so, like, can we just be real with each other for a second? Like, you know, in a subtle way. Like, do you actually think I should marry him or do you want to marry me instead?
Yeah.
You know, like, what about me, though?
And then it takes Suki, like, she's immediately there. She, like, follows her and she, like, you can tell that it was just like, oh, what have I done? And she, because by the time she's like, she catches her, she's just sobbing.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. It's so funny.
And that image of that is like a cherry blossom tree, I assume, like, is so beautiful. And
it's the haunting thing, right? She's like, she's hanging from it, and it's a beautiful cherry blossom tree.
That's right.
And she is, it's like, it's an image of suicide. Like, it's the, it's the grotesquely beautiful moment of it, and that is completely every single time they cut to a wide shot, it could be a painting of something, right? Like with her hanging alone, with Suki underneath holding her, with then Suki screaming away from her as she falls and then turning back. Each of those could be a separate painting of like a triptych or whatever. And you wouldn't know, you wouldn't understand the comedy unless you were able to see the push-ins, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you just see it from that wide angle, it's fully tragic. But as soon as they push in, you're just like, this is really funny. this is some dark comedy right here. Yes. I love it.
100%. I wanted to just go back real briefly as well, because a point I wanted to make about the gratuity of the movie.
Mm.
It reminded me a little bit of Blue is the Warmest Color. I don't know if you've seen that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminded me of that as I was watching it. And I like had like a bit of a like sinking in my stomach of like, oh no, like were these women treated horribly on set? Mm-hmm. Or like, because that's what a lot of the things that came out about Blue is the Warmest Color is like, you know, a male director who was basically like, yeah, do it again. And it's just like, it's so like icky, like in retrospect. And then so I was reading about this movie afterwards, and it was like almost like night and day, where it was just like, oh yeah, like he made sure that there was no one else on set during these scenes. He made sure there was plenty of like rehearsal, like fully clothed rehearsal, and like all that, like put all these like measures in place to make the actresses very comfortable. And they've even said they're like, because like the one is brand new to performing, and so she was like, I don't know if I can do these like crazy sex scenes. But like the bond that the two actresses formed on set, like they both were like, yeah, I felt so comfortable doing those scenes.
That's
like,
awesome.
And so it's just like, oh, thank God, I can still enjoy this movie on that level too, and not feel like, oh, gross that happened. I think he even like filmed through like remote control. That's what it was. He had like a remote control camera. So like even the director and like camera operator or whoever weren't on set when they were doing
this. That's amazing.
Yeah.
They were like in Video Village.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So.
And it's just like the cinematographer and the director.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I was just like, you know, good for you. Like, he's like, any male person on set has the day off also. Like, so all dudes, horny dudes go home.
Yeah.
Like, amazing. So very proud of Mr. Dang Ass Freak Park Chan-wook for being respectful.
IRL. Make that many movies where you're a dang ass freak, I think you
start.
You should probably get some
sympathy
some
for Mr. Dang Ass Freak.
Yeah,
some good standards and practices.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also love that scene. It just like it really shows. It's pretty like it's just so old to show those acts that you never see, and in a way that's like really exciting and very silly.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
Incredibly silly.
You hear what she says when she sees Hideko's nipple for the first time?
Yeah,
it's so cute,
and you're like, that should be the first flag. Is be like, what?
It's also like I don't know, like the obviously like the context as well of like. The quote unquote reason they're doing this is like, this is what the count will be like when you, and so I don't know. I just kind of love the moments too, where she's like, man, if the count saw this nipple, here's what he'd do. And just like, and she does it. And I'm like, yeah, you know what? Go off, girl.
It's awesome.
Yeah. There's such a, like, it's been when it's talking about sex from their perspective, it's always about like, yeah, like imagining, like it, we have to pretend that you're thinking about somebody else in order for us to engage in this thing. There's like, we'll play this role so we can get around it and like build our relationship. And I always think of, you know, something we haven't talked about yet, which is what Hideko's role is in the household with her uncle is, and it's what her
dang
aunt
freak
did.
Basement. Yeah.
Dang at that dang ass freak library.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the basement is she reads out pornography for a bunch of like her uncle's rich buddies,
rich men,
dressed in suits. They're watching her in like full geisha, read out these like pornographic scenes, and it's like the only time where you see somebody totally without anything going on behind their eyes. They're just like no, like they are just pure like id. They're just like, yeah. like nothing else. They're just kind of, you can see their facial expressions, and they're just like, their mouths are hanging open and they're just like putty. And she, what I also think is like awesome about, and it's there's so many connections to another movie on this list. I don't think you've gotten to it yet, but Portrait of a Lady on Fire
might be on the list. I don't know.
Spoiler.
We don't like to spoil any upcoming films, so I can't confirm or deny.
55 minutes. Okay, I'll break my.
So I won't. There's a lot of connections to it.
You can still talk about it. Just don't mention it's on the list.
Oh, okay. So another movie that I love is Portrait of a Lady on Fire. Mm-hmm. And even in like the, I think there's a lot of echoes between Portrait and The Handmaiden.
Yeah.
Even
yeah.
in the green dress that's her portrait that's on the staircase. It's about the reversing that gaze of being the one who's watched. Also watching back.
That's right.
So she's grown up in this house where a woman is performing these stories for these men.
Yeah.
But she also knows how easily these dudes can be tricked.
Yeah.
This is so obvious.
Yeah.
So that's, she's like, why am I going to let myself be confined by these dudes when I can easily, I know exactly what they want and I can like, you know, and I'm going to use that to their detriment and get out of here with my money. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Fucking boss bitch.
Yeah. Hell yeah. I love this movie.
And then the, mentioned briefly the kind of comeuppance for the count and the uncle happening in the way that it does is also like pretty, I kind of appreciate, again, count bad person, but I appreciate that he's like, I'm going to go out on my terms and I'm going to take this fucker down with me.
Yeah.
With his like, mercury laced cigarettes, right? Yeah. And yeah, like when he's like, yeah, you didn't even notice that it's blue, you fucking idiot. Like,
yeah.
getting your rocks off torturing me too much.
Yeah, he's like, there's no windows down here, right?
Yeah. I don't know. I really like that scene too. And it's like, you know, it's happening, cutting concurrently with them making their escape. And it's just it's just this like whole cathartic ending where you're just like, like we were saying, like, oh, everyone's getting what they deserve. This is not what I would expect from a Park Chan-wook film.
Yeah, and it lets him get, like, one final moment of, like, this is pretty fucked up. Like, his punishment for the count once it's all revealed to the uncle. Because the uncle wanted to marry Hideko and get her money as well. Of, like, chopping off his fingers and, like, in the basement where he... killed the aunt and made it look like a suicide. And then there's a fucking octopus in the background.
It's just hanging out.
I think if the movie was long enough, you'd eventually understand like how the octopus ended up there.
Well, there's the like pornographic images that are like very octopus heavy, as it were. So I think at the very least, Uncle's got something to do. He's into some. What is it called?
Hentai?
Hentai? There
Hentai. It
is. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Greg was really quick with that.
And I think that what the because it's all about like there's also an element of like forgery and selling the forgeries.
Right.
And that's what those readings are for, and the like it's just, like it's all about being fake or like trying to outmaneuver rich people to get richer.
And that's the whole movie arguably, right?
It is,
and then
yeah,
that's why it's really lovely for the ending to be like, as you said, mask off, like this is us. We're gonna fuck each other with little silver balls.
Thursday nights on NBC. Here we go.
Good shit. What a great movie.
I enjoyed this one a lot.
I'm a fan.
This is a great film. It has like I do want to talk a little bit about the cinematographer of the film, because it was something that I allowed myself to really just get lost in this time.
Nice.
I want to point out every time that there's a movie on this list that just blows me away with its with its color.
Ugh,
yeah.
Love a good colorful movie.
And its choices and the way that it just springs even static images to life, or never stops being a motion picture. It is just wonderful. And this is Park Chan-wook's longtime collaborator, Chung Chung-hoon, who has actually moved over to America.
I'm looking at some of their credits now.
In a move that I think is a bad idea. And this is why I wanted to bring it up.
Uh-huh.
Because I think The Handmaiden is a cinematography masterpiece. Just hands down. It is wonderful. And if you compare it to one of his...
So I want to earlier... say, just because before we get to the American ones, but so with Park Chan-wook, he's done Old Boy.
This is what I wanted to say, is if you compare it to like his first work with Park Chan-wook, which is Old Boy, and you compare that to Handmaiden,
gotcha.
You see a cinematographer with an incredible amount of versatility.
Yeah.
Because these two movies do not look the same.
Different worlds.
Yes. Completely different worlds. I think this person is extremely talented. Continue, please.
So Old Boy, Lady Vengeance, I'm a Cyborg, But That's Okay, Thirst, Stoker, and The Handmaiden. So we've done like 90% of...
Yeah.
Park Chan-wook's films.
Yeah.
Then
oh my god.
They decide to go to Hollywood.
Yeah. Bust open the doors. And the first movie they do is It.
Pretty good.
A very good looking movie.
I think a good
the recent one.
It Part One.
Oh wow.
I guess they probably did both.
Probably.
It just says It on here. Hold on. Yeah.
It might not be.
Yeah, I guess the first one wasn't it. Sometimes it was marketed as Part One, but I think it was just called It.
Yeah.
And then the second one was called Part It two. Part Two.
Yeah.
So yeah, it looks like they just did the first one. They did...
Which is a good-looking movie. It's a really good-looking film.
Oh yeah, I think that's a well-shot movie. Hotel Artemis, I never saw.
Me neither.
So I can't talk to that. Zombieland Double Tap, also never saw.
I saw that movie. It's got a look, but it's nothing like... It's nothing to like write home about.
Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho, a movie I will go to the bat for. Not my favorite Wright, and I respect many criticisms people have of it.
It looks good.
I think it looks good.
I think it looks good too.
Then, yeah.
Uncharted.
Oh, have not seen.
It's terrible. And it doesn't look like anything.
Yeah. It looks like a PS2 game.
Yeah. The movie.
I just played the game.
It's based on a PS3 game. And it looks like a PS2
Burn.
Game.
Burn.
The movie's a big pile of nothing. We've talked extensively about the lost tomb underneath the Papa John's.
Uh-huh.
Mark
Wahlberg's on a cell phone talking to little baby Tom Holland. And he's like, I'm in a Papa John's right now.
Yeah. Are you sure there's a tomb under this Papa
John's?
There's
a tomb under here?
Is that supposed to be a reference to like the pizza conspiracy theory?
No,
where
God,
there's
I
like a...
a Pizzagate?
Pizzagate, yeah.
And the place where the
like, child pedophile ring.
In the basement of this pizza place that doesn't have a basement?
It doesn't have a basement.
It's just like that movie, The Hunt.
Good movie.
That movie.
His movie doesn't have a his house doesn't have a basement.
Yeah, he didn't do it.
Yeah, he didn't do it. That's the whole point.
That's the whole point.
Have you seen The Hunt?
I have seen The Hunt. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was fine. I like Hilary Swank. Is that
what?
Is
Wait, no, we're talking about a different movie then.
Yeah. Different movie.
We're talking about with Mads Mikkelsen. It's a Danish film, right?
I'm that I have not seen that movie.
Oh,
what was
very
I?
Good.
I'm thinking of the one with Betty something.
Betty White.
What was it called?
It's Hilary
about, like,
Swank.
Yeah, Hilary Swank.
Yeah,
the core.
No, no, it's like a movie about a bunch of like. Like it's like a secret sect of Democrats that kidnap a bunch of Republicans to hunt them.
Oh, The Hunt.
Yeah.
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 So wait, there's another movie called
Okay,
The Hunt?
I'm not
so
crazy.
Yeah, no,
okay.
I'm not.
And Swank does show up in that movie, doesn't
she?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah,
that's
wild. Yeah,
that movie's not good.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're like, why are they so
totally
highly
really
about
into
this weird movie?
No. We're talking about the Mads Mikkelsen.
Okay, I have not. I've heard a lot about it. I haven't seen it.
No, it's a Thomas Vinterberg movie, so you know it's a good time.
He's like a teacher who's accused of like molesting a child, and you know, the movie keeps you in the dark for a lot of it. But
especially because it's Mads Mikkelsen,
yeah,
that guy can play anything.
You don't
You're
know.
Like, I believe it.
Yeah. You know that guy played Hannibal Lecter by doing nothing.
Yeah, yeah.
for
really
3 years. Yeah. For 3 years, he was just on screen, and they pointed a camera at him and was like, "Do nothing.
Yeah,
people will buy
this food. Yeah. And people will think it's gross.
Yeah,
because there might be human in it.
Yeah, this is the second time that show's been came up totally organically.
It's a good show.
Yes, I love
Greg
that show.
Forces it in every time. But then he, so the most recent film is Wonka, which I actually think is a pretty lovely little film.
I do too. I think it's well shot.
Really?
I think
it's really just Uncharted is the big stinker here for the cinematography.
You're allowed to have one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But maybe start working with
South Korean
auteurs again.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Probably be really good.
Yeah. Or I don't know. Stop working with Ruben Fleischer.
Well, yeah. No one should work with him.
That's probably the best bet, because that's Zombieland, Double Tap, and Uncharted.
Oh, I forgot that.
Zombieland, Double Tap, an incredible title.
What? Yeah. Did you know Emma Stone is in that movie? Like, in it?
Aren't they all back?
They're all back.
Right? Yeah.
But she's
even
like,
Bill Murray? Like, doesn't Bill Murray pop
I
up
think
again?
So.
Even though he dies in the first one?
I watched Superbad last night.
Oh, hell yeah.
That movie's great.
So good. And
for the
she's
first time?
Still... No.
Okay.
Oh, no. Whew. No. I mean, I am, I was in high school in the like mid 2000s. So
why I was like, that's surprising.
Yeah,
if you've never seen it till now.
Huge blind spot.
I graduated 2007.
Yeah.
Yeah.
High school.
Yeah.
That movie came out when I graduated.
Like the target audience.
Yeah, I had that summer. That was my summer.
Emma Stone, such a star.
Oh, amazing.
Immediately. You're just like this girl.
Yeah. Love her.
Going places.
Ruben Fleischer's made dog shit movies.
Yeah. Except for...
No.
Yes.
No, Greg.
Yes.
Stop it.
You brought it up. Except for Venom. My favorite movie starring my best friend.
I mean, okay, like... The first Venom I enjoy. The second Venom I think is trash.
How dare you?
I know.
How dare you?
But we can all agree that, 2018, the best actor Oscar should have went to Venom.
Yes.
Venom the actor.
Yes. Yeah.
Venom the symbiote.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
It does a great performance.
It's okay. It's the debut film of a lifetime.
Uh-huh.
Truly. It's a generational talent exploding onto stage.
Yeah, did some like voiceover work in cartoons before this. But...
Like a young Brando.
We're talking about the Black Spider?
Talking about Venom.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Venom. Yeah, the symbiote. The symbiote that gives Spider-Man a black suit briefly, but then turns out it's alive, and therefore he gets rid of it, and then it attaches itself to Eddie Brock, as we all know, and therefore Eddie Brock's hatred of Peter Parker and Venom's hatred of Spider-Man coalesce into a massive symbiosis, if you will, of villainy and evil.
Good word use.
That becomes Spider-Man's nemesis. Now, of course, what the movie Venom does is remove Spider-Man from this equation entirely, and you're like, why are we here?
And the answer is for a magnetic performance from Venom.
Mr. Venom. Sympathy for Mr. Venom.
Sympathy for Mr. Venom, yes! Very good. Carly's on board. I'm sorry you had to be here for this bit. I'm really sorry. It's a long-running bit on the podcast.
I'm overjoyed to be a part of it now.
Okay, good.
In canon.
Great.
I was just checking who won Best Actor
in 2018. I believe it was Rami Malek.
Stinky. Boo.
Yeah.
Stinky poo-poo. Bad
so,
performance.
Yes, Venom.
Give it to Venom.
Venom should have won. Like, I'm on board for that.
I forgot about that movie.
As well you should, because it's shitty.
It's terrible. It's a terrible film.
I never saw it.
You don't have to. You're fine.
Watch the Queen live at Live Aid performance, which they recreate for this movie. And I watched the movie. I felt nothing. I went home and watched the actual performance, and I got chills. Like, it's an incredible performance. And especially, like... I don't want to talk about Bohemian Rhapsody.
We don't have to. Yeah.
The movie has it so that he learns he has AIDS before that performance, and that's not what happens in real life. And so it's just like it injects this like false sense of like urgency and like sadness. And I'm like, no, he's having the best time. He's at the top of the world. He's like, I'm a superstar. Look at all the people here to see me. It's so lovely. Anyway,
sometimes. This is what I love about, like, that's why I would qualify myself as a theater fan first, is that, like, there is an element of theater that just, like, celebrates, just, like, it, well, what I like about theater is, like, it's just real life. Like, it should, it isn't always just real life, I shouldn't say, but it, there isn't, actually, no, I'm going to start over. this is why I went into journalism and not theater, is that it is the celebration of real life and doesn't need to over-dramatize.
Right. It just lets it.
It is like, it is all really, really noteworthy and like dramatic and things to capture attention for really good reasons. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't, it by its purpose does not hyperbolize.
Yeah. And I think that like a reason I like certain movies over other certain movies is when it captures that more, even if it is fictionalized. You know what I mean? Like, so if it's like, I believe that this is a real fictional story, if that makes sense. Whereas when something happens that I'm like, well, that was injected into the film to cause and affect this other thing, and it doesn't feel earned. It just feels like the writer's like, wouldn't it be crazy if this happened? And like to bring it back to The Handmaiden, like I think The Handmaiden does that really well too. Mm-hmm. Like we were saying, like these people, these actors playing characters, playing you know, con artists, playing secret counts, like all this stuff, like they all feel like real people. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't ever feel like this is just a you know, a performance. Except for maybe the uncle, because he's got a weird mustache.
you never really get to know the uncle's deal.
Yeah.
You just like you're given his backstory through the count for about 2 seconds.
Yes.
Just as a means of setting up the rest of the 3-hour movie.
Whenever a guy has to go out into his backyard being carried on his on someone else's back,
what a touch.
Yeah,
what
the hell?
I'm always interested in that. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah. Wait, you see it for 2 seconds, I think? Like, yeah. I don't know if it's ever brought back, but I've always thought about that image of this uncle being carried around. Yeah. And it never happens again, and you're like, that says so much.
That's
seconds.
Wealth.
Yeah.
Right there.
And
that's like, power.
Power and, like, you don't care about people.
Yeah. That's why it's in there, right? Like, it's in there to tell you more about this guy. Because you don't need to know a lot about this guy. I think that's one of the reasons why he's got a fake mustache. It's to make you notice him. Mm-hmm. And to make you think, what is your deal?
Yeah.
And then you get just enough to be like, I don't need to know what your deal is.
I don't want to know.
Smoke that mercury cigarette.
Yeah.
Die.
Yeah. Yeah, just like, what? Of all the time that you could be spending in this group of people, it's not with him. I don't want to spend time with him.
Yeah. No, we really don't. And it's kind of why it's fun to have one cartoon character among a bunch of people who feel real.
Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Maybe that was the point.
Maybe.
We'll never know.
We'll never know.
Because he should never explain.
That, agreed. However... No. Park Chan-wook, if you want to come on the podcast, we'd love to have you.
We have a chair.
We have some questions. Yeah.
Yeah. We have a chair if you want to talk. If you don't,
yeah,
your choice.
We can arrange to have some dang-ass freaky shit in the room while you're here if you are more comfortable with that. I don't know.
Chains?
Octopus?
Yeah, get our hands on an octopus. That octopus is big.
It's a big octopus.
It's a big octopus.
Remember when he ate the octopus in Old Boy?
Of course.
There's a running theme. Yeah. Maybe it's the same octopus.
Maybe it's the same octopus.
Oh,
it's
that octopus is definitely
alternate,
dead.
It's an alternate universe where he didn't eat it.
Yeah.
He grows big and becomes a pervert. I don't know. That's right. I'm saying the octopus is a pervert. Yeah,
the octopus is a prevert.
Everybody in that basement is a pervert.
Yeah.
All right.
I do. I wanted to talk a little bit about the changes that... Park Chan-wook made to the story.
Oh yeah,
from the original book.
Yeah.
And I haven't read the book, and I really want to. But in the book, it follows very much the part one and part two were very much the same. But in the book, the two women are not conspiring with each other. Mm. And so it just so there's a double cross.
It's almost like a Departed situation.
In what way?
Two sides.
I think they're playing each other, but then everybody dies.
Well, didn't necessarily mean that part, but
okay, yes, yeah, then
but
yes.
Just how there's two factions, kind of, and they both think they're on, you know, they're better than the other, and I know exactly what you're doing. And
yes. Yeah.
Maybe it was the wrong analogy. Anyway,
but then there's in part three, you go back to where Sookie came from.
Yeah.
And the kind of mother who runs this ring of pickpockets and baby selling. And it turns out she was in on it with the count the whole time.
Oh,
and there was
no.
like a switched at birth thing between the two women. And so then there's like a whole other kind of subplot where the mother is like the overall conspirator.
Right.
And then the two women like reconcile at the end because they do have feelings for each other, but it's not the same kind of ending. So what I love about what I love about The Handmaiden is that he gives that to them. Like he chose to twist it in that he wanted to make a queer. He also wanted to make a queer movie that wasn't like where the drama wasn't about them being gay. And it wasn't about like people, you know, people not reacting well to that. I love how it's not really a thing. I don't really know how either of them identify. Like, I don't know how Lady Hideko identifies. She has like some kind of pain knife attraction as well. And you like imagine that Sookie has been with men as well, and it's just kind of like, yeah, we're just going with our impulses.
Yeah.
But it's never about the fact that they are in love.
Right. There's never like a this is wrong because of society says like two women can't be together. That's never the issue. It's more that, yeah, again, they're like, we're both conning each other and like, yes, we probably shouldn't fall in love, but we did. Oopsie.
And like the tension is like, it's society, man.
Yeah.
It's like the class structure.
I mean, really it's like men kind of suck. And like, look at all these shitty men that treat us badly all the time. So let's just hook up with each other. Isn't that better? Yeah, it is.
Turns out,
happier this way.
Yeah. And if you can pass,
yeah,
as a man for a couple hours at a time,
go on a boat.
Let's go. We'll go to Victorian England and live as roommates.
That's right.
Yes.
You know that's where they're going.
Yeah. Why not?
They'll be long-time confirmed friends.
Yeah.
History really will remember them as friends. Roommates. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's a joke that Allie likes to say. Because that's how they would go down in history.
Yes.
And
confidants. Yeah.
Long-time friends.
Collaborators.
Definitely not lesbians.
No. They didn't exist.
No.
Yeah.
No.
They still don't.
It's
all conspiracy. It's a gay agenda.
Yes, that's the gay agenda.
Well, that just goes back to our favorite episode.
Which one?
Oh, the favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Alan just screams as a bit, I don't like lesbians because they don't like me. A classic
in the persona of a shitty man.
Yes, a classic rationalization of men.
Yeah.
Well, you know, also, it's interesting about The Handmaiden is like, I think the count's onto it. He like you understand that he is like he understands that Hideko's like not into him, and he's like, that's fine.
Yeah,
that's fine. I don't care. I just want your money.
And then you realize why he doesn't really care at the end when he's like, well, I don't care because I want your money and I'm just going to take it from you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to force myself on you anyway. Yep. Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
That's one of the things that he's just like, he's made peace with that.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. When
it's fine if you don't like me because
it's going to happen.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't
even register for him.
Yeah.
You know, it's a when that scene starts happening, you're like, it again reveals, recontextualizes all of those moments where he's been chill.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's why you've been chill, because you don't have any scruples about this.
You don't have feelings at all.
Yeah. This is fine with you. Okay, get your hands cut off.
Yeah.
Fingers, excuse me.
But he gets to keep his dick.
At least.
His tiny little dick.
His tiny
according,
dick.
According to Suki.
Yeah.
He gets that scene too.
Yeah. Which is also so funny. Like, imagining him as, like, yeah, Brad Pitt or, like, yeah. George Clooney.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And then like, being, like, demasculated.
Emasculated.
No, I think demasculated.
Demasculated, no, yeah, you're right. Sure. Yeah, that's a word.
I also read that the after he does that and she, like, takes her hand away and she, like, kind of, like, shakes it off, that was apparently, like, not scripted or like planned. It was just like Suki, the actress, sorry, like did it instinctually, and then Park Chan-wook loved it so much she's like, do that again.
See, she's incredible.
She's great. Yeah. I loved her.
It's you could tell it's just like, so she's just uninhibited.
Yes.
100%. And a real firebrand.
Mm-hmm.
Before we play our game, mm-hmm. I just want to mention one of my favorite moments in the I almost said play in the movie.
Well,
that,
I think it was also a play.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
In the movie that gets recontextualized, because it's a moment that it's a set that just sticks in my mind. The asylum,
mm-hmm.
the doors yeah. of the asylum that, and like the overhead shot of it, how crooked it is and how like weird it is and how like it reminds me of like a horrible Victorian London, sanatorium or whatever. It's just nice to know that those things are also were everywhere. So that's good. But my favorite part about it is Hideko's little giggle.
Oh, yes.
When in the first part, you're like, oh, she is heartless.
Yeah.
In the second part, she's like, oh, she thinks Sookie's so cute.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
her little performance,
so convincing. Yeah, and she's like having so much fun.
Yeah,
yeah.
That she can barely contain herself.
Yeah,
that is cute.
Yeah.
There's also so the moment
cute.
Where
so cute.
She's
so
cute. Being like,
oh no! There's a part where she's being like taken away, and Hideko like is distraught because even though she's like, I like this is part of the plan, like. But she, like she's still seeing her, you know, her partner arguably like in pain and she's like crying, and then she has to like put on like a stone face to turn around and be like, let's go get something to eat to the mm-hmm. count. Like that moment's also just like some lovely little like acting within acting, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. You can tell like this woman has spent her whole life code switching.
Yeah.
And, oh, like, yeah. it just comes naturally. It's, like, she's especially challenged because mm-hmm. she's got, like, finally, like, a partner
yeah.
That she cares about. But she's, yeah, this is, she's good at this.
Yeah.
And another thing about the asylum is that I think they have to go to Japan for the asylum. I don't know if it's in Korea because... that is also like and it's also interesting to think about like the house where all this takes place, which is like a literal mashup of an English Tudor style house and a Japanese house in Korea.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So all these like layers of colonialism and yep. And so I think like even the idea of a mental asylum is not like it's not a natural it is imposed by. So another culture,
mm-hmm.
Which is also interesting if you think about Park Chan-wook adapting an English novel and setting it in this setting, which it's another layer of code switching and of like aspiring to be what you're not and feeling like you have to trick or switch or. Rise to another set of norms or mm-hmm. behaviors or cultures.
Yeah,
this is the kind of movie that I think you could like with each layer you could peel back another thesis.
Yeah,
on you yeah. know like the queer story and what this means in queer narrative. Peel that back. The colonialism, you know, mm-hmm. peel that back. The like. Colonialism of England into Japan into Korea. Peel that back to Japan into Korea.
Yes,
you know, peel that back. Just overall asylums and what they mean in film and all that sort of thing. Like
yeah.
you can just keep going and going and going and write paper after paper.
Yeah.
on this and movie, even, it's a film like, theorist's dream.
Truly, and like the opening of like you're in with all the babies and like in the pickpocket. It reminds me of Oliver, which
oh,
is
yeah.
like you know a classic like early English story. It's, yeah, there's, God, I love this movie.
But if there's if you got anything else to say about it, please let us know. Otherwise, we're gonna head over to our game here because we're gonna think about wrapping it up afterwards.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm spent.
Well,
good movie.
You did a great job.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks for coming prepared.
All right. So the game for this episode is called Cinema's Greatest Cucks.
I cannot believe that this word has not come up yet.
I was going to say, the reason I chose like to create this game is like we can say count one of the bigger cucks of the movie.
A huge,
whole,
huge
total cuck.
The cuckdom,
total
cuck. Yeah. Is unrivaled.
Yes.
I had this thought on my way here. I was like, do
I use the word cuck?
Oh, yeah. Do I think the word cuck is so funny because I like this movie? Or do I like this movie because I think the word cuck is hilarious?
It's all part of a tapestry, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's a great word. And Alan, you've hit oil.
So here's how it's going to work. It's going to be a loose game.
All right.
Just for fun.
Yeah.
No points. But I'm going to give you a film and an actor who was cucked in that film.
I'm never going to be able to get through it.
And you have to name the two actors who cucked them.
Oh, the two. All right.
All right.
Okay. Okay.
You have to name the ones who did the cucking.
Correct.
Okay.
The cuckers.
I'll give you the cuckold.
Yes.
And you must give the cuckers.
Got it.
The cuckers.
We're going to start with an easy one.
Okay.
Twilight, Taylor Lautner.
Really? You think he was cucked?
Yeah.
Okay.
In the saga.
The name of the actors?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Kristen Stewart and
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah. There you go.
Two of our greats.
Yeah.
Two of our greats. Two of the great cuckers of all time.
So, yeah.
Oh, Robert Pattinson also cucked in real life.
Yes, cucked in real life.
That's true.
Yeah.
Good
for you, Robert.
Oh, we're like, yeah, this is no judgment on the cucked.
No, of course.
No. We've all been cucked at least once in our lives.
In different ways.
Yeah,
you know?
Different ways.
In different ways. Many different ways to be cucked.
Do you not think that he was cucked in these movies?
I don't know. I think you have
It's a bit more complex, I would agree. But
I think he's just such a crybaby that he wants to be. Like, he would be privileged if he had actually been cucked. But he never actually had a relationship with Bella that would actually cause him to be cucked.
Constitute a cuckold.
Sure. I guess I'm using the term more loosely.
Yeah.
In the sense that there's, like, kind of a love triangle of some kind, and one's the one left out.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Okay.
I think some of these are much more clear, like, yes, definitely cucked. Okay. Some of them are a bit more loose, perhaps.
Yes. All right. All right. This is a loose one. I just think
it's funny.
This is a loose cucking. I'll take that. Yeah. That's a fun category.
the Royal Tenenbaums, Gene Hackman.
Oh.
Angelica Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy, Stanley Tucci.
No.
I've only seen it once.
You're not a Wes Anderson
guy. Like 20 years ago.
I'm not a Wes Anderson gal either.
No, okay.
Is it Morgan Freeman?
No, but you're getting closer.
Danny Glover.
It's Danny Glover.
God.
We got there together.
Okay. Uh-oh.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You haven't seen it in forever. Yeah. It's okay to remember there was a black man, and it was probably a celebrity black man. It's fine.
It's okay.
No one's mad. Oh, boy.
poor Royal Tenenbaum.
Yeah. Yeah, he sucks.
I wouldn't know. I can't remember the movie.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. All right. Indecent Proposal, Woody Harrelson.
Woody Harrelson, an Indecent Proposal.
A famous cuck.
Yes. Is this the Glenn Close one?
Nope.
No. That's the other one.
Demi Moore.
Yep.
And Robert Redford.
That's right.
Ooh, I haven't seen it.
Mm. Mm. I went through a big 90s erotic
Redford?
Thriller.
Oh,
kick.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is this 80s or 90s?
This is I think 90s. Yeah, early 90s.
That would make sense if Woody Harrelson's in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Cheers has to happen for him to happen.
That's right.
Ah.
Crazy Stupid Love, Steve Carell.
Well, that's Marissa Tomei. No, no, it's Julianne Moore and the guy.
I haven't seen.
Oh, you never seen
I've
it?
Seen, no.
Oh, you got to see it. I think this is an underrated little.
I've seen Crazy Stupid Love a stupid amount of times.
Yeah, a crazy stupid crazy amount stupid. Of times.
And it's Kevin Bacon.
And I love it. It's Kevin Bacon.
It's the Bacon. Yeah.
David, because they say his character name a lot. David Lonerham or something. Yeah,
it's a good name. It's a good movie. Mm. It's one of the it's one of the better movies in the Stone Gosling trilogy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
I would say it's the second best one.
After
La La Land.
Oh.
I think that's the best one. And then the worst
oh, then
one
was
is Gangster
one.
Squad.
Yes, okay,
oh, I forgot about that
and,
one.
And the other.
Yeah. Yeah.
Directed by?
Ruben Fleischer.
Mm-hmm.
No. Full circle.
All right, American Beauty, Kevin Spacey.
Well, he's cucked by the great Annette Bening.
Uh-huh.
And the great Peter Gallagher.
That's right.
That's
and his
right,
eyebrows.
Peter Gallagher. Yeah. I mean, I would too.
The king of real estate or something?
Yeah, he's the real estate king. Yeah.
She shouts it while he fucks her.
Yeah, it's she's great.
She is great.
She is amazing.
That movie, maybe one of the worst aged movies of all time.
Maybe, except for her stuff.
Well, yeah.
She's fantastic undeniable. In it.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of things had to happen for that movie to not to be in the state that it is right today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next one. X-Men, James Marsden.
The Eternal Cuck.
I haven't seen this either.
You haven't seen X-Men?
No.
The Any first one?
No.
This is more of a overall the franchise cucking.
Oh, really?
This mostly happens in two.
I'd say two.
I want to say.
Three is when, like, she's back, but.
Yeah. And she's bad.
She's Phoenix now.
Yeah, and it's so bad.
It's bad.
Yeah. It's devastatingly
Storm?
Bad.
Storm?
No.
It's Famke Janssen and Hugh Jackman.
Yes. Hugh Jackman is Wolverine, Famke Janssen as Jean Grey. Jean Grey, James Marsden plays Cyclops. Jean Grey and Cyclops are an item, but clearly Famke wants to fuck Wolverine.
Yeah.
They versa. Never actually do it. So again, this is more of a loose.
Oh, they make out though.
But they do make out.
Yeah.
That counts.
Yeah.
And she does murder James Marsden.
Yes.
With her Phoenix powers.
Off screen.
Off screen. Oh boy.
Damn.
Marsden was only available for a couple of days because he was off filming Superman Returns.
Yeah. Next one is Superman Returns, James Marsden.
Actually,
it is.
Yeah,
he's amazing. James Marsden's my favorite. This is
it's great.
Kate Bosworth,
love her.
Yeah, and Brandon Routh.
That's right.
As Lois
Superman
Lane
and Lois Lane. Lois Lane has a new beau, played by James Marsden.
Yeah,
I believe it's Perry White's son or something.
Yeah, yeah. Larry White.
Larry White.
And
Superman returns, like the title says. And Lois Lane is like, well, get out of here, James Marsden. I want to fuck Superman.
Well, yeah, this is Superman.
Yeah. Also, we probably have a child together.
Yeah. We definitely have a child together.
Oh, yeah. He's got superpowers. Yeah. Anyway. You ever seen that one?
Nope.
Okay.
I see you're avoiding Bryan Singer movies.
Mm,
this is good.
Smart.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
This is good.
That's
none
true.
Of them
three
are...
of them have come up already.
Yeah.
Wait, is
Bohemian Rhapsody is also a Bryan Singer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the next question about the cucking... another James Marsden because he's also.
Well, let me see. Let me just check my notes here.
Is it
The Notebook. James Marsden.
I know that one.
Why don't you take that one?
That's Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams.
You got it.
One of it sets the template, I think, or maybe it makes abundantly clear that James Marsden is the greatest on-screen cuck.
Our favorite.
Miraculous.
Our favorite. Last one is Enchanted. James Marsden.
Guy.
I know. This is just an excuse to talk about how many times James Marsden gets cucked on screen.
Oh, you spilled my... Oh,
I'm
it's fine. We'll get it. We'll get it in a minute.
We'll figure it out after.
Yeah, we'll figure it out afterwards. This one's Amy Adams and Patrick Dempsey.
And Patrick Dempsey.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
Has anyone seen Disenchanted yet?
No.
No.
No. Me neither.
No.
Me neither. It's probably going to evaporate from Disney Plus.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus, so I don't subscribe to that anymore.
James Marsden also cucked in Into the Woods.
Is he in that one?
He is.
I don't
know. Yeah, he's one of the princes.
Is he one of the princes?
Yeah. Oh, man.
I think
remember Chris Pine. Is Chris Pine and James Marsden are the two, or
yeah?
Am I mixing? I think it's Chris Pine.
I think it's Chris Pine and James Marsden.
I thought so. Yeah.
Agony.
Yes.
Like they.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's the only part of that movie I liked.
I agree.
Was the princes singing that song?
Yeah.
I was like, this is great.
It's pretty excellent.
Why isn't the rest of the movie like
this? I like Meryl as the witch.
Nah. Nothing against her.
Meryl.
Yeah, let's see.
Streep alert.
I don't see James Marsden on here.
Weird.
Okay.
Who's the other prince?
Billy Magnuson is the other prince.
Oh.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
He looks like this.
Oh, a real James Marsden type.
Yeah.
James Marsden look to him. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's in Game Night. That's what I know him most for. Yeah. That's
sure.
A great movie.
A great movie. Game Night. Have you seen that one?
Yes, I have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Movie rules.
Yeah. And one of my favorite Jesse Plemons performances.
Oh,
I was just going to say, my boy.
Profitable for the Tostitos Corporation.
He's so funny.
He's great. Anyway, that's Cinema's Greatest Cucks.
That was awesome.
Wow.
The winner
James Marsden.
Is James Marsden.
Winner? James Marsden. By a long nose.
You know, you could have put one more in there.
Which one?
James Marsden in Westworld, the TV series.
Well, yeah, I was sticking to movies. But yes, he does get cucked in
and
that.
The answer is Evan Rachel Wood and Jimmy Simpson.
Yeah. That's right.
Not Man, Ed Harris.
Harris kills Evan Rachel Wood over and over and over again.
But he's Jimmy Simpson.
He is.
Okay.
But he's bad Jimmy Simpson.
Gotcha.
He's when Jimmy Simpson after
when he's young is when that's right. Okay. Yeah. It's been a long time since I watched that show. Yeah. I just remembered that being quote unquote the twist.
It was a huge twist.
I was like, so he's Ed Harris, right? Like as soon as he appeared, like they're doing a thing. I can tell what they're doing here. This is in the past. This is in the future. And that's Ed Harris. Anyway, because he chooses the white hat instead of the black hat. And Ed Harris has the black hat. I'm like, I see what you're doing. He turned evil. Black and white.
It's fun.
It's fun.
It's a good season.
It's a good season. A good mini series that only had one season.
That's right. Never talked about it again.
Yeah, they should have stopped while they were ahead.
That was a great game.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Alan.
Really good game. Yeah.
And thank you so much, Carly, for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This was so much fun.
Can't wait to have you back.
Yeah, you'll be back in future episodes.
Great.
One of those unfortunate things where we talk about your favorite one first and then later on on the list.
All other
ones that you're
like,
nah, it's not as good as The Handmaiden,
fine.
Though.
Fine.
Make sure to bring that up, though.
Yes.
None of them are as good as The Handmaiden.
Yeah. It's in my Letterboxd top four, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do have a type of movie.
What are your other three?
The other three are Black Christmas, which is, yeah, it takes place in a sorority house.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Gardens.
I've never seen it.
Oh, two women live alone in a shack in the Hamptons.
Okay.
Roommates.
Interesting. Yeah, roommates.
I mean.
Best friends.
Mother and daughter.
Oh, okay.
So, nothing's going on.
Okay.
And then Romeo and Juliet, the Baz Luhrmann.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah. William Shakespeare's Romeo plus Juliet.
Mm-hmm. R plus
A Baz Luhrmann film.
Yeah.
Yeah. In which a woman falls in love with a feminine looking man.
Oh, very. So. With a great haircut.
Oh.
I love DiCaprio's haircut in that.
He looks great.
That one shot with Radiohead playing, I think, when I saw it as a wee teen, was not prepared.
Yeah.
Can I say something that might be a hot take
for
you? I don't think he's very good in that movie.
I don't think anyone's particularly good in that movie.
I like Danes quite a lot.
Really?
In it. Yeah. I just...
She has her moments.
I think
overall, it's a struggle using the Shakespeare words
in
the setting in such a stylized way.
Yeah.
That I think the acting is never what I appreciate about that movie.
No.
But, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I think the two people that are, like, untouchable in that movie are Miriam Margolis and Pete Postlewaite.
Well,
so,
I mean,
but you can't well,
two of our greatest. I actually really like, I can't remember the actor now, but Mercutio.
Harold
Perrineau from Lost. I think he's kind of undeniable in that movie.
Actually, yes. No, you're absolutely correct.
You know, I got a soft spot for Leguizamo as well.
I do too.
I mean, I was about to say, you know, who's almost a disaster?
Leguizamo. I mean, I don't disagree, but I have a soft spot for it.
I think because of that. I have many soft spots for everybody in that movie.
Yeah.
He's got his little toothpick. Yeah. He's like, peace.
I hate the word. And I love Harold Perrineau go, a scratch, with the, like that. Oh, he's a fabulous. Young hearts, run free.
Do yourself, be true. Definitely be. First time I ever heard that song and never cannot picture him singing it.
Yes,
sure.
When that's
I
hear his it now. Song. Yeah.
Well, thanks for telling us your top four.
Yeah, what a fun way to end.
Yeah,
that was great. We should do that with all the guests.
I agree.
Why didn't we start this before, damn it?
No, it's a good thing, though, because everyone's going to come back.
That's true.
So
that's
true. We haven't...
Well, we have one that we've wrapped on.
Who's that?
Well, I don't want to
say. Oh, right. Of course.
We'll get her to record it.
Addendum.
And then add it in on her final appearance. All right.
That'll be good.
Because that's not coming out for a while. Thank you, Carly, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listeners. You can find us on the socials at Bad Neighbors Pod. You can email us at thehammockdistrict3rd@gmail.com.
Numerical 3.
And you can subscribe to our Patreon. Patreon.com/Boathouse Studios. Host told the German way. And did we drop our Love is Blind
we did.
Guesses?
Yes, we did. We did.
That we recorded impromptu.
We did.
Before our Rogue Nation episode. So that's on our Patreon if you want to hear, by now, long after this episode comes out, Love is Blind is wrapped.
Mm-hmm.
But you can hear what we guessed would happen.
Well, like who would say no, who would make it to the altar?
Yeah. Mm. And I'm just going to say, the dynasty remains.
The dynasty continues. Raise the cup, Al. Take it for a spin.
Be proud of that.
He must be
I'm
stopped.
I'm very proud. I'm very good at guessing who's going to say no at the altar.
He must be stopped.
But yeah, and then we're also doing our commentaries on the live action cartoon movies
that
are shitty.
That are shitty.
So Chipmunks, Garfield, and the Smurfs.
That's right.
Good.
Enjoy those.
Somebody's got to.
For just a measly $2 or $3, depending on what country you're in.
That's right. And as always,
bye.